I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with Arnie Roth and his son Eric. They're arrangers and conductors for A New World, intimate music from Final Fantasy. It's the music you know and love from the games repackaged in a version for chamber orchestra, and it's really wonderful to have a chance to talk with both of you.
Well, thank you for having us.
You've got two performances coming up Friday, June 17th at the Tillis Center at Long Island University, and you've also got two performances at the Aetna Theater at the Wadsworth Athenaeum in Hartford on Sunday, June 19th, and those will be Connecticut premieres. It's really exciting because I know one of the reasons for A New World, all the arrangements, was to be able to take this incredible music and go to smaller venues.
That's right. That was the idea, was that we could come up with a touring concert production that would be more flexible, smaller, be able to go into more alternative spaces than the large production, Distant Worlds, which involves over 100 musicians on stage and video screen and much more expensive and difficult proposition and requires certain types of venues. So yeah, that was definitely the point.
Versatility is definitely a big hallmark of this production. We want to be able to exist in different types of venues, different cities and markets. And so far we've had a really great time being able to do that.
Yeah, honestly, the fans of Final Fantasy music are so devoted that every one of these concerts, easily a third to half of the audience has either been to another Distant Worlds concert or one of our other productions. And so many of them, it's been really encouraging, so many of them actually prefer the chamber music concert because it's very obvious and visual for them to connect all the musical elements with each of the instruments that are playing with the smaller number of performers. So I think it's been a real success since we started this.
Well, I think what's so interesting about it, too, is that since there are no extra visuals or a great big chorus, it really just, I think, illustrates fundamentally what great music this is, that it can just kind of stand on its own in the concert hall.
That's exactly right. It not only does it stand on its own and excel in the concert hall, but I think, as Arnie was alluding to, the audience members have a new relationship with the music because they don't have that the visual that they usually associate with the different music. That's going on in their head to a certain extent because of memory, but only in the same way you know a great piece of music or if you knew Die Walküre or something like that, and you know that very well. You know the staging. You have that in your head to some extent when you listen to that recording.
Benjamin Neuss, who's the pianist who's touring with you, he's phenomenal. I want to talk more about him in a bit. But he said one of the things that he really enjoys about these concerts is the interaction with the audience, because when you play one of the pieces that's a huge fan favorite, like One Winged Angel, the crowd just goes wild. And, you know, I'm wondering if that's a thing that's kind of really missing from traditional classical concerts. I was just thinking how cool it would be if, you know, when the soloist, like, totally nails the cadenza, if people just go wild.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of that. The funniest thing is that we've now tried to do more audience participation. We actually get the audience to sing along, believe it or not. And you mentioned One Winged Angel. And we're doing that more specifically in the chamber music version than elsewhere when we have this gigantic chorus with Distant Worlds. But I have to point out, I mean, we just literally came off of performances in Boston at Jordan Hall and Winston-Salem at Wake Forest University this last weekend. And they were all sold out. And it's with Benny, with us, of course, as the pianist. And it's so enlightening to talk to the fans and interact with them and understand how deeply their knowledge is of the music of Final Fantasy. I think Final Fantasy itself is one of the more unique video game series in that you actually have fans of the music of the series, not just fans of the gameplay or the action, but literally they're fans of the music composition in the series. That's that's not something that happens with every video game series. And I think Final Fantasy might be a little bit unique that way. And it's probably one of the driving reasons why we can continue these concerts all over the world. And it's not just North America. It's literally all over the world.
I'll just add that about the concert hall, I think that exuberance is a very good thing. So I think the kind of exuberance that you find at our concerts is, I don't know if it's missing, but give me more of it.
Uh-huh, definitely. Well, it's great for the performers, too, I'm sure, because you're getting an instant reaction from the audience. So that must be a big part of what keeps you going on these long tours.
It's a great rush, you know, to deal with these fans. It's great that they know just about every single title that we play. The music that we play for A New World is a different set of repertoire than the music for Distant Worlds, purposely.
Yeah, there's almost zero overlapping repertoire.
Right. I mean, you mentioned One Piece, that is one of the, literally, the single exceptions, which is One Winged Angel. And that's because Nobuo Uematsu, Square Enix, all of us feel that there's a couple of pieces that are such classics that they really ought to be on every Final Fantasy concert. We are actually an official licensed relationship with Square Enix on all these concerts. And so all of the repertoire choices, all of the programming, this is done in cooperation with Square Enix and with Nobuo Uematsu and the other composers of the series.
And you've been working, Arnie, for a long time with Nobuo and with Square. And I would love to know a bit of what the process is like. And Eric, I know you've done arrangements too. What's the process like when you take a theme, let's say from one of the newer games, and you're reworking it into a chamber version for A New World?
Well, there's a couple different methods or routes that we use. One is Square Enix likes to defer to the original composers when there's a question of if we're doing how we want to adapt a particular piece for the concert stage. So I think it's an important point that we will work directly with the composers first. Whether we do the orchestration or the arrangement for the concert, or whether there's also a team from Japan that works on these things as well, has a lot to do with which piece we're working on, what deadlines are we on. We've done a lot of the arrangements, but I must point out, if you look at the history of all this, we would point to one of the great orchestrators and arrangers, Shiro Hamaguchi, who worked with Nobuo Uematsu for many, many years, as setting up the template of a lot of the big orchestra arrangements that we do. You know, Square Enix was doing concerts of Final Fantasy music in Japan all the way back into the late 1990s. They started this probably maybe the mid-1990s. I mean, there was a concert tour in 97 and 99. But again, these were just tours of orchestra and no video information or anything. But Shiro Hamaguchi was the one that wrote most, if not all, of those arrangements. We are the first ones to adapt all of this to a chamber music concert. And actually, you know, I have to say that Eric did most of the arrangements when we first launched A New World in, I guess this, we're in our
London.
Third year now.
Oh,
London,
sorry.
Yeah, London, February of 2014. That was really 100% of those of those arrangements were all done by Eric and I. I mean, they were all done for that concert, and Square Enix kind of let us develop that on our own in conjunction with Nobuo Uematsu as a springboard. I mean, he approved all the orchestrations and arrangements as we went through that. In the case of Distant Worlds, sometimes it's Nobuo Uematsu coming to us and saying, you know, Arnie, I really want to do Swing to Chocobo, and I'd like a kind of a big band orchestrated version of that. And, you know, he would specifically ask us to do that. Other times, we approach Square Enix and say, for the 25th anniversary, we have these ideas of new repertoire that we think should be the items that are added. And then we'll look at that, we'll talk to the various composers involved, and decide who should work on which piece. So there is, I must tell you, you know, we're in communication with Square Enix practically every single day of the year. I mean, literally.
Wow.
I'm exaggerating when I say we're emailing every day, every night with them. So there's a long thread of communication that's ongoing with them about all of this.
I just wanted to weigh in a little bit about the repertoire and the process there, just because it's, I think it's worth noting that that's a lot of the reason, one of the biggest reasons why our productions work, is because of the deep resources of repertoire in all of these games. There's so much music, and it's not just a couple of themes that get turned into new versions here, or here's a fast version, or here's a slow version, or here's a tango, or whatever. There's there's lots and lots of different music in all of these different games, and they're making more. And this deep relationship with this music is what makes it possible.
So far, we're up to 29 years of music. And I think it's really easy to kind of overlook what a huge development Umatsu's music was in the games, because he, as far as I know, was one of the first game composers to have themes for different characters and very specific music for points in the game. And when the games were new, the early games, a lot of game music was really very generic.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. He comes out of that era. I mean, you think of themes like Super Mario and Zelda and some of the early things. Essentially, it was 8-bit, so you had a computer chip playing all the whatever music you were using. Sometimes that involved maybe three different voices or four different sounds, and for certain limited length of time loops, you know. And I think what we need to look at is the confluence, in the case of Final Fantasy, of it being an RPG, a role-playing game, where there's multiple players and the players assume the roles of these characters, and Nobuo Uematsu's initial plan, which was to give every single character, every important battle, every environmental quest, every journey, every love relationship, every single one has its own theme, leitmotif, if you will. And as the players assume the role of these characters, they're hearing these themes over and over again. Then factor in the point that over the years, the 29 years, they bring back certain characters or certain battles or certain thematic material that come back, you know, from Final Fantasy I, we see in Final Fantasy VI or VII, a restatement of this theme or that theme or that character comes back. And it's really a very powerful ally in developing huge music fans from the Final Fantasy fan base. So I think that all of those factors are an important factor, but certainly Nobu choosing to write, as we like to say, the Peter and the Wolf style of writing, you know, where every character gets its own theme, that he started that 29 years ago is a critical factor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like like Wagner, only for video games. And
exactly.
The Ring cycle on a really epic scale. So.
Right, right. And Eric's right. I mean, each one of these games is, what, hundreds, thousands of hours of music? You know, as the characters are playing the game and they take different routings through the game, there are different musical themes that follow them. And Nobu, again, was kind of a driving force in that. So he did break a lot of ground in those early years. People were not doing that. When you compare the other games that were out at that point, Super Mario, you know, just a very simple kind of, single player or a couple of players, but, you know, one kind of game action game. When you compare that with what he was doing with just a computer chip 29 years ago, it's really quite amazing.
And he's also referenced the music of really kind of, you know, fundamental and groundbreaking classical composers, too. And as I was listening to your chamber music version of One Winged Angel, just to go back to that for a second, I was hearing real echoes of Rite of Spring and some Beethoven. And so he's got that material, too, that he can kind of borrow from and use as inspiration.
And don't forget Iron Butterfly and things like things like this as well. You know, it's. Go ahead.
I'm going to jump in because I was just in Paris with Nobu. We just played Berlin and Paris with Distant Worlds. I literally just came back a few weeks ago, and we had the funniest conversation, Nobu and I, as we were doing kind of an autograph photo session afterwards. As we're walking over to that, we're starting to play a new piece from Final Fantasy VII called Cosmo Canyon. I'm not sure I even told you about this. Did I tell you about this, Eric?
No. I don't think so.
This is very funny. Cosmo Canyon has a rhythmic motif that it begins with, and it's bo-da-da-da-dum, bom-bom, ba-da-da-da-dum. You know, it's just this repeating rhythm. And he and I he started the conversation saying, you know, Arnie-san, I think it should really be a heavier kind of a rock figure with more of an accent on the beginning of that. And I pointed out to him, because often Nobu doesn't even remember that, hey, when you wrote this in 1997, your original soundtrack was just a computer chip playing this, and it had like a guitar plucked sound that went da-da-da-da-da, just short notes. And we were talking about this, and I said, you want it more like mountain like Leslie was, Mississippi Queen. And he and I were laughing about this because he knows every single 1970s, 1980s rock band more than any of us could name. He and I go, we keep trying to stump each other on old rock player, you know, groups. So he's quite a walking musical library, not just of classical music or opera, but rock, jazz. You know, he has a very wide, he loves Celtic music, he loves Renaissance music. I mean, you hear echoes of all of this stuff in all of his music.
And it's easy to have, it's not easy. But it's you can have the idea to have a lot of different themes and try and make expressive music and have different styles and be omnivorous, but he actually accomplishes it. And with all of this music for so many years, for so many people, and don't underestimate how difficult it is to make music that people are going to listen to over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, it's really quite an accomplishment.
Oh, absolutely. Have you noticed, now you probably know his catalog better than anyone, except obviously himself. Have you noticed that his style has kind of evolved through the years?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, he's always been, I don't want to say scattershot, you know, but kind of
diverse
is, yeah, a better word. I mean, he's always never stayed in one particular bag or genre. You know, he's just as happy working in a swing situation as he is working in a mambo or samba. Full-on, you know, punk rock situation, and then, you know, something that sounds very much like Carmina Burana or Stravinsky, as you pointed out. So he's always done that. So when you say evolved, I think what's evolved is that I think you probably know that Nobu Uematsu was, if I have my facts correct, the Final Fantasy was the first video game series to use recorded audio material in a game. When they jumped up from 8-bit to 16-bit, they were the first ones to record full orchestra, and then he quickly jumped onto full rock band, a cappella chorus, all kinds of different ensembles. And I think that if he's evolved at all, it's been mostly that he's expanded some of the styles within those genres. So within orchestration, he has started to do more contemporary orchestration within rock or rock bands. I know that he's very partial to playing with his band, and so he will explore that a little more deeply than he used to early on, that kind of thing. But I've got to tell you that adapting some of the early 8-bit stuff, you know, the early Final Fantasy 1 through 7, those items adapt very, very well into full orchestra or chamber music. We just have a great time adapting those things. And in many ways, I think Intimate, we're able to adapt more things more quickly than with Distant Worlds. And Nobu always is delighted with that. I remember when we first started doing Danger in the Forest from Final Fantasy IX, this was a piece that he never even anticipated our doing in the Intimate series. And when I said, oh no, you've got to hear this, and we started playing it, he loves that version of it. So there's a tremendous amount of things that adapt maybe more easily to the chamber music setting than the big orchestra setting in many ways.
Well, I think probably because there were fewer voices with the original versions. And plus, I know a lot of those programs tried to simulate strings or winds or whatever, but they weren't always really lifelike. So in a way, you've got kind of a blank slate to make the instrumentation kind of whatever you think is the best fit.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, you might think that, but people have something in their mind's ear. And it's important to appreciate what's actually the identity of the piece of music and what's just style that can be more mutable. I think that that's actually a very gray area sometimes, and it's not just a blank slate to reimagine as you would.
Yeah. So now, well, there's a couple of items with that. First of all, the basic premise of both Distant Worlds and A New World, in terms of our writing style, is that we are trying to present the music as close to the way that the players, the fans, heard the music in the game. That's a very different exercise than saying, here's an arranger's fantasy based on themes by, you know, themes from Final Fantasy. But in many of those cases, an arranger's fantasy on those themes, maybe 50% of what you're hearing is about the arranger and not about the composer. And that's great. I have a great time when we do those programs, but that's a different exercise than what we're trying to do in these concerts. We're trying to really present something that's very close to what they heard. Having said that, we have to be careful about the choices of instruments. I can relate to you, you know, for instance, from Final Fantasy VI, Nobu wrote 45 minutes of opera in that, but that's before they had recorded audio. This is when it was 8-bit. So we now play in Distant Worlds, we play the full opera. What we did was we orchestrated all of that. So now the opera involves three vocal soloists, you know, with choir, with orchestra, and it adapts very beautifully. And it was very obvious what he did back in the day in 1995, Final Fantasy VI, something like that. He had the character Celis up on a parapet of the castle, and she's standing there looking out at the moon and the stars and singing. But of course, he could not record human voice at that point. So what you hear is a synth voice and no words, and the words pop up in a dialogue bubble. So you see the lyric and you hear,
ha, 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 ha.
You know, it's just a synth voice, and the harmony is implied. And there was an entire 45 minutes of opera that way. Which is a remarkable accomplishment. And we do those things now in fully orchestrated with the lyrics. So that's just another example of what he did in the 8-bit world that's brought to the stage now in the concert stage.
Incredible.
Yeah, it really is.
I'd love to know how you choose the set list for each concert. How do you plan out each program, and how do you decide, you know, what's really essential and what has to be included?
Yeah, that's tough. That's actually one of the tougher jobs that we have.
It's tough every time.
So here's the basic that I like to explain, the basic ideas with both Distant Worlds and A New World. First of all, realize that we have, what is it, almost 140 music scores in Distant Worlds right now, which is obviously way more than you can do in one or two or three or even five concerts. And we have perhaps 40 or 45 scores with Intimate, with the chamber music concert. The first concept is Square Enix would like us, if at all possible, to represent as much of the series as possible. That means that we can't just ignore a particular game. So we try to represent the basic Roman numeral Final Fantasy 1 through 14, if as much as possible. So that's one concept. The other concept is, have we performed in this city before? And if we have, what did we play last time? You know, so we look at that, of course. The other concept is, do we have any special guests or performers that would lead us to try to feature one thing or another? Or another one is, what's coming out of the series lately? Obviously, there's new games coming out every year, 14 being the latest one, and they've just announced that Final Fantasy 15 is supposed to release worldwide, I think it's September 30th. So that's a very exciting thing for everyone, and they're doing a big promotional push up to that point. So we're looking at all that and when we can add new material on each of these things. So all of these things go into a pot, and we look at this, look at our time limits, what kind of performers we have in that city, and try to make some intelligent decisions.
And this is before you even get to things like pace, right?
Right. Pace and flow of the concert, right. There's a tremendous amount of fans that would just like to hear as many battle themes as possible. And then there's a tremendous amount of fans that really are partial to the particular character themes or love themes, you know. Final Fantasy is unique in that way. I think that they really have themes that are about the relationships between the characters. And these are beautiful things. We've had people propose marriage, you know, during our concerts, and specifically want to hear Xanarkand or Aerith's theme or, you know, some other very important, emotional, sentimental theme for them.
And not just one couple.
No. No, it's been many, many concerts now. In Paris, we just had another proposal happen. Aww. It was a very big deal. The entire audience.
Beautiful.
It's a great thing. I mean, it's fantastic. Very deep emotional things for the... they spent many, many hours playing this game. And they cry when we play some of these themes, you know. Aerith is a character that actually expired during Final Fantasy VII. It was the first time ever, another first, when a character died in a video game series.
That was very respectful how you said that.
Right. Yeah. But it's a sad moment for a lot of players, and yeah. 7 is the biggest, most popular game.
Mm-hmm. So that's my favorite.
I think Arnie just left out one thing that I really love that we're doing with some Distant Worlds programs now, which is when we've only done it a couple times where we do an appreciation of a particular game. So on that, we've done that with Final Fantasy VI, where almost half of the concert is taken up with music from Final Fantasy VI. So then, you know, that the idea of trying to hit on every other game is a whole other thing. But I love these kind of these appreciation concerts also. I wanted to mention that.
Sometimes when we do a thematic thing.
Yeah.
You know, and what you're talking about really was more of a Distant Worlds concert that we did where Nobu was in. He was asking for many years. Six, he's particularly partial to. Mm-hmm. So he said, can't we do a bigger, you know, some kind of a bigger tribute? And of course, we go through long discussions with Square Enix because they don't really want us, if we start featuring every single game as we go here, every anniversary of the release of every game, first of all, it'll be every year, and it's hard to find that because, honestly, they were released in Japan first, most of the early games, and then a year or two later in North America, Europe never even saw anything until Final Fantasy VII. So you can see that each territory is kind of a unique thing that we need to look at. When we go to Europe, we probably feature 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, much more so than we do the earlier games because, frankly, that was the first game that was released there, so they know it much more deeply than they do the earlier games. In North America, they really love Final Fantasy VI and a lot of the earlier games, so we're able to do that. So it really does depend on the territory as well.
Just like localization in in-games, so when they're in all the different languages.
Localization, that's true. And they're trying to do these things with more global releases these days. It's a tough thing to do, but Square Enix, like in this one coming out, 15, is supposed to be a global release on September 30th. And we'll see if they stay on that schedule.
Yeah, well, if everybody calls in sick that day, you'll know they worked it out. So.
Right.
Well, Arnie and Eric, it has been so much fun talking with you, and we are just so looking forward to the concerts here. And thank you so much for taking a little time to tell us about them.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.